today on Tell Somebody, Todd O'Boyle of Common Cause and Christopher Mitchell of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance talk about municipal broadband and corporate efforts to outlaw it.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman. Stay tuned now for Tell Somebody with Tom Clammer.
Welcome to Tell Somebody, www.tellsomebody.us, on Twitter, at Tell Somebody Now. This is your host, Tom Clammer. The views and opinions expressed on this show are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily reflect those of the station or anybody else involved with it. If you have any comments or questions on the show, drop me a line at mail@tellsomebody.us. Big thanks to everyone who helped out on the pledge drive last week for their community radio station. This station is theirs and it's yours, and you should think about getting involved with it. And of course, thanks to former CIA analyst Ray McGovern for helping out on the show last week. And by the way, Friends of Community Media and the Kansas City Public Library will present a talk by McGovern on April 7th. More detailed information on that should be out in a couple of weeks. Friends of Community Media will also join with KC Move to Amend to bring Free Press co-founder Professor Robert McChesney to the All Souls Forum on April 6th. Look for KC Move to Amend and Friends of Community Media on Facebook. On with the show. On January 27, 2014, the Kansas Senate introduced legislation written by a cable industry lobbyist and recently tabled that would drastically limit Kansans' future options for broadband internet access. Writing on the Institute for Local Self-Reliance Community Broadband Network's webpage, Christopher Mitchell said that if passed, this bill would create some of the most draconian limits on building networks we have seen in any state. We have two guests this morning to talk about municipal broadband, the proposed Kansas law, and similar laws across the country. Todd O'Boyle is Common Cause's Program Director for Media and Democracy. He joined Common Cause in September 2012 and is responsible for research, advocacy, and strategy for media reform. And Christopher Mitchell is the director of the Telecommunications as Commons initiative with the New Rules Project of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. Okay, let's press the magic buttons and see who we've got on the air here. Todd O'Boyle and Christopher Mitchell, are you with me? Good morning, and welcome to you both to Tell Somebody. I appreciate it. We heard recently of a bill in Kansas to outlaw municipal broadband. Can one of you start telling us about this law, and then maybe we can move to the national picture? But that's what first got my attention. Todd O'Boyle with Common Cause mentioned that this law was in the works, and then either one of you want to take that?
Sure, I can jump in. This is a bill that would certainly make community-owned networks much more difficult. It would outlaw all forms of municipal networks where the city itself owned the network. But it actually goes substantially further, and it would have prohibited even Google and other private companies from working with local governments to build networks. And so it's really this extremely broad bill that could have gone so far, the way it was written, to stop libraries from being able to offer Wi-Fi for free to patrons. It's a bill that, if you listen to the authors, the cable lobbyists, they say that people are taking it out of context, but I can read. I have a little bit of history with these sorts of things. And there's two explanations. One is they thought they could get away with it, and the other is they don't know how to do their jobs very well, and they wrote terrible legislation on accident. So I think the only explanation is that they were trying to shut down any potential competition that they may face in the state.
I'm looking at an article here from the Wichita Eagle posted on February 1st. They quote Senator Julia Lynn, Republican of Olathe and chairman of the Commerce Committee in the Kansas Senate, where the bill will be heard, and said the main argument in favor of it is philosophical. The concern of government competing with private enterprises for broadband customers. Lynn said she doesn't think that's a fair competition because they, municipalities, don't have to pay property taxes, and they don't have to pay franchise taxes. So she's saying these municipalities like Ottawa and Chanute could be beating up on these poor little companies like Comcast and Time Warner. Either one of you want to take that until we get your voices associated with your names? Maybe you could start out with who's speaking first.
Sure, this is Todd. I think on the face of it, I don't grant the premise. She says the main issue here is philosophical. It's not philosophical at all. It is commercial. It is about lining the pockets of the biggest telecommunications firms in the land. It's about eliminating competition and consumer choice, and it's about making sure that the best in connectivity will never get out to rural Kansas. Let's be clear here. There may not be a great, a really strong commercial business case for fiber optics, the best broadband in some parts of rural Kansas. And I understand why Comcast may not be or Cox may not be building there. There's no reason that the community can't provide for itself, and there's no reason that Cox should be able to write its own rules.
Go ahead.
Tom, this is Chris. I just wanted to second that and say, this is, in some ways, there are some philosophical issues, and what Todd said is correct, but, there are people who believe that, that local governments should not be allowed to do this because the private sector could do this. And it's important to point out the implications of that. Right now, as you mentioned, Chanute and Ottawa, rural towns in the southeast area of Kansas, would have far fewer jobs and employers because those companies were getting ready to move out of town, and some companies actually moved into town specifically for the network. So if your belief is that local governments absolutely should not be doing this, you're saying that towns that don't have it should basically disappear. And I think it's extreme, but it's important to point out that that is the logical conclusion, because in many of these towns, there is no provider that wants to invest.
A couple of questions come to mind. One for Chris Mitchell. I think your organization, somewhere in the on your web pages, I saw the word commons. Can you define commons generally and in this context, and why it should apply to something like municipal broadband?
Sure. You might think of commons as a shared resource in a community, sidewalks, public parks, places that everyone has access to. And we use commons when we talk about this because We believe that the right to communicate is fundamental, and in the modern age, everyone needs to have access to, access to tools like the internet in order to do all kinds of things, to be a engaged citizen in a democracy, to educate themselves, to take part in the modern economy, and even just to have a high quality of life. And so there's a movement right now, which is to say that people should have access to the telecommunications services that a few big companies choose to provide, and we should only have the power of giving our money to them or not as we choose. We say that this is something that's too important, that we all have to have a say in it, and so that's why we use the term commons.
And another question Todd, did you want to weigh in on that?
Well, I think Chris is absolutely right that communications are a fundamental issue of our democracy, and at Common Cause, that's why our work is called Media and Democracy Reform. We think that to get the country back on track and to give everyone a say in our democracy, we need quality telecommunications. We need a reformed media, and the tools that we have at our disposal are great in terms of online communications or social organizing or alternative media, but only if you can access them. And that's why allowing the cable industry to essentially write people out of the picture and, as you know, to put it in Chris's terms, tell these towns to disappear is a clear threat to our democracy.
Yes, and I've read somewhere in some of these articles about the Kansas law that the industry is pushing this law in Kansas and in general because they can lose a bunch of money if municipalities do these things. But in cases where they're not going there anyway, why do they want to keep the city from doing municipal broadband if they're not going to mess with it anyway? Can you explain that a little bit, either one of you?
Sure. This is Chris. I think a good example actually comes to us from the city of Centennial, which is in the Denver metro area. There was recently a business there that wanted to get access to fiber, and Comcast basically said, sure, we'd be happy to bring you fiber. That's what we do. It'll be, I believe it was $20,000 upfront cost. Now, if that city, if that business was located just 30, 40 miles north in Longmont, a city that has built its own municipal network, the connection fee would be free. They just have to pay the ongoing fee that a business would have to pay anywhere else. And so the big cable and telephone companies are really trying to avoid any other options. Now, that's an example from an area that's fairly urban and there's some competition. But in areas that aren't served, there's multiple things. One is the cable and telephone companies don't want any competition there. In many cases, they have the market locked up, and they don't have to spend a dime on investment, but they will keep having customers coming back to them because they have no other choice. Another problem is what we call the threat of a good example. The better Chanute looks because it's building this incredible network, the worse that Time Warner Cable looks, and the more other communities that are in lucrative areas where there's a higher density and there's more people to fight over, the more that those towns start to think about building their own networks, the more it's going to threaten the big cable and telcos. So there's a variety of reasons. And the final one, you might say, is that ultimately these companies want the federal government or the states to subsidize them to expand access. This is an argument we see many cases, and right now we're having a discussion at the federal level just how much to subsidize a number of rural providers to expand access. And in many of those areas, I know of community efforts that could expand networks without any taxpayer dollar assistance. So there's all kinds of reasons that they want to make sure they don't have any new competition.
And I've been hearing a lot just in the last couple of days about Comcast buying Time Warner just, you know, more of this media ownership consolidation generally, and this specifically in relation to the internet. I'm not real up on which companies are covering the whole state of Kansas. So would this affect Kansas much, and how would this affect things nationally?
Well, Todd here, I can say nationally, this deal couldn't be a worse idea. This proposal should be dead on arrival at our antitrust regulators, because if the number one largest cable provider is buying the number two cable provider, that clearly stifles any innovation and competition that were left in the market. And this is a harm to all cable and broadband consumers, even those that aren't immediately affected, even those that don't subscribe to one or the other, because it puts more it ups the ante for consolidation ever more. And whenever the first and the second combine, then you can imagine that the third and fourth are probably going to combine pretty soon thereafter. So it may not immediately touch Kansas right away, but it will soon.
And
you know, I'd like to add on that. I think just for your people in the local market there, and this is Chris, the most people in the Kansas City regional area have Time Warner Cable as their cable provider, and so they would become Comcast customers. This would transition them from being among the most hated companies in America to a different of the most hated companies in America. So it's
good to have a
actually,
choice.
Right. You're actually going to have slightly less worse customer service from Comcast than you did from Time Warner Cable, but it's actually probably going to get worse, because the larger the companies get, the more arrogant they become.
Mm-hmm. And this is Tom Clammer. You're listening to Tell Somebody, and we're talking to Todd O'Boyle with Common Cause and Christopher Mitchell with
the Institute for Local Self-Reliance.
Right. I was wading through the other part of that. But and we're talking about municipal broadband, a law proposed in Kansas, written by a cable lobbyist. I understand it met with a little bit of resistance, and it's was tabled, but it's still lurking there, right?
That's right. These cable lobbyists don't get paid to give up.
Right. And ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, if I've got that right, I don't know if they're involved with this particular one. Maybe you can tell me that, but they are involved with this generally nationally, aren't they?
Todd here, they are. And I don't know if ALEC is directly implicated in this, but these bills all have ALEC DNA, if you will. Some of the largest funders of ALEC come from the telecommunications industry, and that includes the firms we've named today and a couple others like Verizon. And what they've done is push for restrictions, in some cases outright bans, on consumer choice and competition for municipal broadband on a state-by-state basis. They've also worked to undermine other forms of consumer protection and universal service through other forms of industry-friendly legislation. But we've seen this before, and we know how it turns out. When you allow the cable lobby to write competition out of the market, then consumers are hurt, and that's the bottom line.
Yes,
and I would just add that, you know, it's almost kind of funny to think about it, but I don't know that ALEC cooked this meal, but they sure set the table and provided all the ingredients.
Busy folks. They're into a lot of things. I want to get to the national stuff maybe in the second half of the show, but can you talk about some of the things that are already going on in Kansas, including, as I think Chris said at the top of the show, Google Fiber, which As the law is currently written, would that affect renewals of Google contracts that are existing? And I understand it would keep any more new ones from happening. Is that right?
Yeah, I think there's a theoretical argument in this part, because I can't imagine that even though the Kansas legislature may be very heavily influenced by the cable companies, it would be incredibly stupid to try and do anything that would disrupt Google Fiber. Frankly, it would be incredibly stupid to disrupt the municipal network projects, but Google has lobbyists and a heck of a lot of clout and meets with the governor. So it's almost not conceivable that this would move forward and harm them. But as written, the bill certainly would impact Google. Google has a number of arrangements in terms of locating some of its equipment on city land in Kansas City. And uses a number of city assets in the deployment of the network that, under this broad bill, would not be allowed to continue. I suspect that, I mean, if that were to happen, first of all, it would be violating federal law in some ways, and I don't want to get into that. So if this law did pass, we would see a number of court challenges, and it would be messy, and that's in some ways what these lawyers love. But the real problem is that it would send a message, and it would send a message to small companies that were thinking about partnering with communities to build networks. It would send a message to anyone that might think about investing in a municipal network that it would be risky. And so if a community was looking at building its own network, the first thing they do typically is sell bonds to investors to finance that. And those bonds, no one would want to buy those because the Kansas legislature was acting in such a hostile manner. And so I think there's a lot of things that could result from this. The main fear right now that we have is not so much that it's going to emerge and hurt Google, because it's so unlikely, but that it'll emerge and hurt everyone else who doesn't have a lot of lobbyists in Topeka.
Yes. And can you talk, again, either one of you, about some municipal broadband projects that are at least somewhat in place, if not completely, in places like Ottawa and Chanute? I read an article someplace where a city official from Chanute felt like, I don't know if that was the intent of the lobbyist who wrote it or the legislature, but he felt like this was directly targeting what he was trying to do in Chanute.
Well, you know, it might help just listeners to first learn a little bit about what we're talking about when we say a community network.
Yeah, please.
And so I'd like to turn it over to Todd, Todd and I worked together on a case study of his hometown, Wilson, North Carolina, and I think just describing what they did might help people to understand what we're talking about.
Gladly. So my hometown, Wilson, North Carolina, small, medium-sized city of about 40,000 in the eastern part of the state, several residents and businesses approached the city government and said, you know, our broadband is flaky, it's cutting out, it's hard to do business. The schools were complaining that it was difficult to take electronic standardized tests, because the network was faulty. They were even having problems with the network suffering when it would rain outside. And so we've had enough with crummy service. And they asked the city government, can you do something about it? And the city's first inclination was to look for a public-private partnership, talk to the providers in the area, that was Time Warner Cable and CenturyLink, and say, can we do something? Can we partner to improve service? And both of the private providers, Time Warner immediately shot the idea down, and CenturyLink said, well, you know, and they looked into it, and they almost came to an accord but didn't. And so after trying to work this out with the private sector, the city said, well, you know what, we're just going to do this ourselves. And they built a broadband network that was, you could liken to a public utility. They called it Greenlight. And it's the fastest broadband network in the state of North Carolina. It's an entirely fiber optic network, so it's the fastest possible way to connect data. So it's the city building its own infrastructure, and we know that we trust cities to build all sorts of infrastructures all the time, and there's nothing controversial about that. But for whatever reason, the cable industry feels entitled to stop municipalities from building their own infrastructure, stop communities from investing in themselves, and stop consumers from benefiting from competition. And I want to, you know, underscore the benefits of municipal broadband, because while it may not be appropriate for every community, it has certainly worked in many. And by introducing competition, you know, it forces the incumbent providers, the corporate providers, to up their game, to improve their level of service, to upgrade service, to contain cost growth. It provides, as Chris has mentioned, a great fertile ground for new business creation and for small businesses entrepreneurship to take off when they have quality telecommunications infrastructure. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with consumers enjoying their product and actually feeling like they're getting what they're paying for. A final aspect is that by being a truly local service, you're much more likely to get rapid, adequate customer service when it's a local telephone call. And in the city of Wilson, if you have an issue with your service, you actually dial City Hall, and as the recording says, for titles, deeds, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, press 1. For green light, fiber optic internet, press 2. And they say, you know, that we have to guarantee quality service, because if something goes wrong, you know, we'll see you at our kid's soccer game, or we'll see you at a church on Sunday or something like that. And you actually have to face the people that you're serving.
Okay. Right. There's over 400 communities that have done this. And Chanute in Kansas is the most prominent one. The most prominent one in Kansas. We also did a case study of them, and they've built a very interesting network starting in 1984, actually. It was when they put their first fiber for their municipal electric utility. But they also added some wireless over the years, and when local businesses said, you know, we can't get the service we need from the existing providers, the city was able to hook those businesses into the city-owned network of Chanute. And then when a major employer, an aerospace company, was looking to find a location, they were scouting Chanute. And one of the things Chanute could say is that we can guarantee you this fast internet connection at an affordable price. And most importantly, for a company like that, we can make it very reliable, more reliable than a lot of the private companies are willing to do. And for that, they got over 100 jobs from this aerospace company that chose to locate there, in part because they have this wonderful fiber network.
Yes. And I've got another quote from this Wichita Eagle article. This official with Chanute said, Chanute's too small to attract the kind of investment from the private sector. And as a result, he said, local cable service is so bulky that nearly half the town's residents subscribe to satellite TV instead. And he says the city has been a state leader in broadband development since the 1980s. In addition to its fixed broadband market, the city has free Wi-Fi in all its parks and public green spaces and a 4G mobile data network. One of the few rural Kansas cities that's growing while most are bleeding population. The local hospital can provide advanced telemedicine services, and the local college, Neosho County Community College, is the fastest growing in the state and among the fastest growing in the country. So this sounds like pretty significant stuff. I need to take a break here. This is Tom Clammer. You're listening to Tell Somebody on KKFI. We're talking to Todd O'Boyle with Common Cause and Christopher Mitchell with New Rules Project of the Institute for local self-reliance, and we'll be back with more from them right after you listen to this.
What if we had more hard-hitting journalism, more local stories, more quality kids' shows, more independent voices?
What if we had more people telling their friends about the vital information they hear on KKFI? What if we had more listeners supporting community radio in Kansas City and the surrounding area? Most of the nearly 2 million people our 100,000-watt transmitter can reach have never heard of us. What if more people helped us get more hard-hitting journalism and more local stories on the air on KKFI? What if more people realized the potential of KKFI and got involved in trying to reach that potential?
What if we had less celebrity fluff, less mind-numbing advertising, less partisan shouting, less junk TV? We need more public media, better public media, new public media, now.
Welcome back to Tell Somebody. This is your host, Tom Clammer, and we're talking about municipal broadband with Todd O'Boyle of Common Cause and Christopher Mitchell with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. They have written online about this issue, I believe together and separately. One avenue to get to some of that is just put in your search engine the Empire Lobbies Back, and we'll get some more links before the end of the show. But Chanute, pretty significant stuff there that this law could impact, right?
Chris again, and you know, they have this tradition of. Well, they actually call themselves the logo or the tagline of their community is a tradition of innovation, and they've certainly lived up to that. Where right now they're providing service to the hospital, the schools, what we often call the anchor institutions of a community, as well as a number of local businesses. And one of the things that came out just before this bill was introduced, you know, sort of coincidental timing, you might say, was that they are planning on extending their fiber network to connect every single resident of the community. That would be all businesses and all citizens would have access to the same type of services that are being made available in Kansas City, and which has been which has made Kansas City the center of the broadband universe for much of the United States right now. And so this bill, you know, was very broadly written. But there's no doubt that it's trying to shut down what they're doing in Chanute.
Yeah, this gentleman I quoted earlier, I don't think I had his name and title before, but it's Larry Gates, Chanute Utilities Director, and he's quoted as saying, "This bill is an attack on competition, an attack on municipal government. It takes away our local control and local decision-making. It will hurt our efforts in economic development." And you can find the bill itself if you want to read it. Google Kansas Senate Bill 304, and it should come right up. Todd O'Boyle, what you mentioned your case study of Wilson, North Carolina. Can you talk a little more about the national picture? I believe you jointly, you and Christopher Mitchell, have a document out on nationwide coverage?
That's right. And I should say Chris has done a fantastic job of assembling resources and documenting the municipal broadband issue for years now at www.muninetworks, M-U-I, MUNINetworks.org, and he has a map there that shows where municipal networks are and where the telecommunications industry and the forces of ALEC have managed to eliminate consumer choice and community self-determination by passing restrictions or even outlawing municipal broadband on a national basis. But we see that there are basically 20 states that have restricted or eliminated municipal broadband. We know that this is, while Chris is right, there may be some philosophical elements of this. There's this is an industry-driven attempt to eliminate consumer choice and innovation. And it's happened on a state-by-state basis. We documented the fight in North Carolina. The telecommunications industry was unsuccessful in 2007, 2009, and 2010 before finally succeeding in 2011 to basically end any new municipal broadband in the state of North Carolina. I can say that, we should all be excited. We should all celebrate the fact that the industry was unsuccessful last year in Georgia, and it seems that this bill in Kansas has been shelved. And that tells us that, even in fairly red states, when consumers speak up, when they contact their legislature, when activists take to the airwaves and take to the Internet to say that, the industry isn't allowed to write the rules, a community should have the right to build their own network if they see fit, then, we can be successful, and we can beat back these industry-driven attempts to eliminate competition.
Yeah, I'd just like to note that this is a bipartisan issue. This is one of those things where no matter who you are, Republican, Democrat, Independent, or somewhere on either side of any of those groups, just about everyone thinks that these decisions should be made at the local level. The reason that we have to see these fights at the state level is because that's where the cable companies are spending a lot of money on lobbyists. They're afraid that at the local level, people might choose to be self-reliant, and they're trying to stop that and prohibit it rather than just trying to make a good argument at the local level for why a community should trust Time Warner Cable rather than itself.
And
Chris is absolutely right, and this is truly a bipartisan issue, and there's bipartisan support. We have good quality municipal networks in red states and blue states alike, and if you take the example of Colorado, the city of Longmont voted to create its own network in, I believe, 2011. Is that right, Chris? And Longmont is a little bit more on, associated with progressive or liberal politics. More recently, the city of Centennial that Chris mentioned, it's thought of to be a little bit farther on the right. But in both cases, residents of the city voted to say, we want this network. We want to be able to provide for ourselves. We want competition and choice. And it's worth noting that was in a state where the industry years ago managed to institute a referendum requirement, and it resulted in very extensive, very expensive a public campaign against municipal broadband that the telecommunications industry waged, outspending the folks interest in municipal broadband by a healthy margin. And nevertheless, consumers couldn't be fooled because they knew what they had been getting and that they knew they wanted better.
And this whole struggle reminds me a lot of, 96 or 97 Telecom Act that most of us in my circles and the general public probably didn't pay any attention to, but that took the maximum one-company ownership of radio stations from something like 60 to 1,200. And the impact that has had on information going to the public, and then the struggle to fight against further loosening of media ownership restrictions, with the good news being that the public and as you were suggesting, across the political spectrum, you had very liberal and very conservative people joining together fighting cutting the ownership restrictions. The good news is that it was mostly grassroots, bottom-up thing that worked. The bad news was, as you suggest, with some of these assaults on municipal broadband, that kind of like Arnold Schwarzenegger in a Terminator, they keep saying, I'll be back, and they come back. So
you could take it actually back even further. I mean, this is one of those things that we've been dealing with as a country since we declared independence. And I think for people who are interested in the full story, the work of Barry Lynn, who's with the New America Foundation, but has written a number of books, and the most recent is titled Cornered. This is a terrific place to get a better sense of how there's been a force to try and have corporations get as big as possible and really take over many aspects of our lives. And so, you know, whether we're looking at today the news that Time Warner Cable and Comcast are agreeing to come together, or we're looking back at the terrible decision to allow much more consolidation in the radio and programming markets, it's really all the same sort of fight, which is how much control do we have over our lives, do communities have, and how much is controlled by a boardroom in Philadelphia that we have no say over?
Maybe this...
Can I add one thing here?
Todd,
this is
please,
Todd.
Please.
I think you're absolutely right in diagnosing the problems of the 96 Act, and particularly on the radio side where it ushered in the unparalleled amounts of harmful consolidation. However, you know, it's worth noting that the plain language of the 1996 Act did say that, quote, I'm quoting, any entity, quote unquote, should be able to enter the telecommunications marketplace. And it's plain as day to me that that means any entity includes municipal entities. However, in a fateful Supreme Court disagreed with me, and the telecommunications industry was able to successfully argue that any entity does not include municipal entities, and therefore opening the door to all of these really bad bills that we've seen on a state-by-state basis.
Yes, and Todd O'Boyle, before we run out of show here, I wonder if you could briefly talk about Common Cause and your part of Common Cause division, or whatever you would call it, and why this broadband thing is so important. As I mean, that's certainly been answered to some extent, but how your Common Cause activities fit into the bigger picture and the municipal broadband.
Sure. As I indicated earlier, we are concerned about that. We're concerned generally with the right of individuals to connect and communicate and the right of advocates to organize. And in the 21st century, the Internet is our town square of democracy. And so giving people a voice means giving them a connection. And, well, I'll say allowing them to purchase a connection from the provider of their choice. So one thing that we really work on is universal service. We generally think that as I said earlier, that our ability to create change on other issues, you know, Common Cause is first and foremost a good government group that works to get the money out of politics and to hold the power accountable. Our ability to get our message out requires us to have a quality media and telecommunications ecosystem that supports alternative independent voices. So I want that's the general issue. On the specific issue, let's be clear that, as I said, this is an industry-driven attempt to eliminate consumer choice and competition. We're always concerned about the corrupting role of money in politics, the outsized role of money in politics. And you don't have to scratch the surface too hard to dig up. You know, as we said, in Kansas, this is an industry-written bill. It was written by a lobbyist. So this is not the democratic process at work. This is a corruption of the democratic process.
Christopher Mitchell, I'm going to read your title again, Director of the Telecommunications as Commons Initiative with the New Rules Project of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. Quite a mouthful, but I wonder if you could do a similar description of your organization and how you work with Todd and broader issues and municipal broadband.
Sure. The Institute for Local Self-Reliance is celebrating our 40-year birthday this year. And we've been working on a lot of issues over the years, and they all focus on the idea that people should have the authority within their local governments to make the decisions that they need to. You know, you might say flippantly that the people who have to deal with the consequences should be making the decisions. And so we work on that in a variety of program areas, a lot of work on waste issues, fighting incinerators, on encouraging composting and recycling and that sort of thing, working with local businesses to make sure Walmart isn't driving them out of town, working with the energy to make sure that our energy dollars are staying local and we have more clean energy available to us. And for the past, let's say 8 or 9 years, we've been working on telecommunications. When we recognized that the internet was going from being a nicety to a necessity, is what I like to say. That program really intersects with Common Cause because we want to make sure that people have real access, that they're able to access all the information that they need to be good citizens and to make sure that our local economies in each community are able to thrive and take advantage of changes in technology.
And, you know, again, I keep going back in my mind to this, the Telecom Act and the effect on radio, although I guess it addressed a whole lot more things than just the ownership of radio station, but just the idea that such a huge impact on what gets driven into people's heads in the media, the dominance of right-wing talk radio, but then again, across the political spectrum, people saying no one company should own all the radio, TV, newspaper outlets in a community, and no one company should own 1,200 radio stations, Trent Lott and Russ Feingold standing shoulder to shoulder on that issue. But so much of the public, seeing the impact years later, not realizing what policy changes let that happen. And I can sort of see this happening with the internet. Just in the 5 or so minutes we have left, any more thoughts on why people should be concerned about this and what they can and if they are concerned should do, and any more websites or other sources of information you guys want to get out there?
Sure.
We're very concerned about the creeping monopolization of our media and the resultant gatekeeper control, that when you allow one media telecommunications behemoth to get bigger and bigger and bigger, it squelches out independent and alternative voices. It makes it harder for important voices like community radio and community media to be heard. And so we're concerned about the effects on localism and diversity on the media side, and the lack of consumer choice and the lack of consumer protection on the telecommunications side. In terms of websites, we'd be happy to have everyone go to commoncause.org and sign up for our email alerts, or follow us on Twitter at Common Cause. We're always looking for ways to get people involved. We've had some successes. You know, in the end of 2012, Chairman of the FCC, Julius Genachowski, looked at relaxing those cross-ownership rules that you referenced. Common Cause joined with a Free Press and several other groups to say that no, we need to put the brakes on consolidation. We need more localism and diversity. We need more independent and alternative voices. And we rallied, over 600,000 petition signatures and comments at the FCC. So there is, I think, evidence. You referenced the successful media ownership fights of the early 2000s and mid-2000s, there's evidence that the public being mobilized does make a difference at the FCC. And I'd encourage people to tune in. You know, stay tuned. We will, you know, be communicating with folks about ways they can get involved at commoncause.org.
Okay.
And you can,
Chris?
You for the municipal network specific information, like Todd said earlier, we run muninetworks.org. That's M-U-N-I networks.org. There's daily information about different networks around the country, and you can find fact sheets, reports, a weekly podcast. We do all kinds of things. But I think it's important to step back and say that if we really want to win on this issue and on many other issues, we have to deal with the fact that as part of mobilizing people, it can't just be around a single issue. We need to recognize that as long as our campaign finance system works the way it does, it's going to be very hard to win on any issue that we care about. And so I would also really encourage people to look at the work that, you know, Todd and Common Cause do to try and encourage disclosure rules and also just limit the role of big corporations in the decision-making processes of our government. A really good book to check out is Republic Lost by Larry Lessig, and his work on campaign finance reform I think is terrific. And so, you know, seeing these bills in Kansas and in many of these other states, it's a symptom of a larger problem, and that's that cable lobbyists are writing our legislation. And until we solve that, it's going to be very hard to solve any of the problems that we care specifically about.
And Todd O'Boyle, I'd also like to mention you work closely, don't you, with former FCC Commissioner Michael Copps, who's been on this show a number of times over the years. He's now with Common Cause, somebody that a lot of us look at as a very model of what a public servant should be, right?
That's right. Michael Copps, former FCC Commissioner, leads our Media and Democracy Reform Initiative, and he's been a long-time champion of the public interest. He served at the FCC for 10 years, and throughout that tenure and since leaving, you know, he's really fought for local voices, independent voices, diverse voices on the media, fought against consolidation. He cast a lone dissenting vote in the NBCU-Comcast merger in 2009, and he's been a leading voice for consumers and communities.
And Chris Mitchell,
follow him on Twitter at CopsM, C-O-P-P-S-M.
Yes, at C-O-P-P-S-M. And Christopher Mitchell, what you were saying about how some of these things are connected to money and politics. I want to remind our listeners we do have Robert McChesney coming to town. It's a little ways off yet, but keep it on your calendar. He'll be at the All Souls Forum on Sunday, April 6, presented by Friends of Community Media and Move to Amend. And in sort of echoing, I think, what you said, Christopher Mitchell, the Citizens United Money in Politics corporate personhood issue and the media reform, Robert McChesney has told me that he thinks they're not just related, they're Siamese twins. You can't solve one without solving the other, and you're not going to solve anything if you don't deal in some way with those. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely would. And I would just like to say one other thing, which is that, you know, we've been talking a lot about what needs to happen at the federal level and state level, but there's a lot of things communities can do. And that's what we really specialize in at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. So I encourage people to go to ILSR, Google our name, web search our name, and learn more about what they can do. As we're trying to change the federal environment, there's things we can do at the local level that'll really make a difference.
Yeah, and we say, you know, no matter what your first issue is, we have the media reform as your second. Bob McChesney could put it better.
Exactly. Well, Todd O'Boyle with Common Cause, and Christopher Mitchell. Find him on Muni, M-U-N-I, networks.org. I want to thank you both for talking to us today on Tell Somebody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and I hope to have you on again soon.
Anytime.
Take care.
Well, that's it. We're out of time. You've been listening to the podcast edition of Tell Somebody, www.tellsomebody.us. Comments or questions, send an email to mail@tellsomebody.us. You can also follow me on Twitter @TellSomebodyNow. The Tell Somebody podcast is produced and distributed by Tell Somebody and may or may not reflect the broadcast of Tell Somebody heard on 90.1 FM KKFI in Kansas City, streaming around the world at www.kkfi.org. I'll be on 90.1 FM KKFI every Thursday morning at 9, right after Democracy Now! If you haven't heard Tell Somebody before, I hope you'll listen again. Check out the podcast and the broadcast. Click on a tile at www.tellsomebody.us for a link to a past show. If you enjoyed the show and appreciated the information you got from it, please tell somebody about the podcast and the broadcast. Spread the word to your friends and contacts by word of mouth or Facebook or Twitter or email list or any other way you can think of. This is Tom Clammer. I'll see you next Thursday at 9 a.m. on Tell Somebody or anytime you like at www.tellsomebody.us.